At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
That's a great mashup, actually. On the Love album, that's one of my favorites. It just gels so well.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. And just that that nice little video accompaniment that is online.
Yes.
That dovetails so nicely into the Apple mini doc on Revolver.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, somebody should put them together sometime and put Tomorrow Never Knows on it.
Right.
And have something great.
Yeah, that's true. But it's quite an inspired mashup, that one. I wonder whose idea that was. Would that have been Giles and George Martin?
That's a good question. Maybe one day we'll have Giles on the show and ask him that question.
Yeah.
Whose idea was this? And put it just that way, express it that way, so they'll know if we're mad at him or not.
Right.
We'll see if we can instill fear.
Mm.
But the reason we're doing this is we didn't finish the Revolver discussion. So in exchange for you not getting your questions answered in real time live from us, we're going to just talk and hopefully everybody will be able to understand us.
Yes. You and I do agree that Revolver is most likely the apex of their collaborative efforts. In
the
terms
creative
of,
high watermark.
Yeah, in terms of them being a really rock-solid foursome,
yes.
All contributing.
All contributing, same page, same direction, same purpose.
Right.
Yes.
And we've had a show, of course, about was Pepper the Beatles' creative peak?
Yeah.
And we do know that George was not contributing nearly as much to Pepper
right.
as he was to
Revolver.
Right, that's right. It's a revolver. However, it was a collaborative peak maybe for John and Paul Pepper.
In a sense, and it's interesting when you start to kind of analyze what we do know. Mm. And we have this great documentation of a lot of it in real time as Hunter Davies was around during the writing of a lot of Pepper as well as the recording.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of documenting the process, you know, where they're sitting there composing, for instance, with a little help.
Yes.
You know, which was largely Paul's baby, but, you know, John chiming in lines as we want to do.
Yeah.
And you could see his fingerprints throughout the album on what are considered to be Paul's compositions.
Yes.
Like She's Leaving Home.
Right.
That sort of counterpoint.
Yeah.
And then, of course, A Day in a Life, great collaborative joining of two musical ideas that were separate that make for the greater whole.
Right. And then we also have, you know, the two-part backing harmonies rather than the three-part.
Yeah, throughout. And as George has sort of, you know, as you said, checked out.
Yes.
You know, this, much like with Let It Be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's much better documented, but you're lacking that three-part vocal, you know, block sound that so defined the Beatles.
Yeah. So the basis of this show is a kind of comparison of Revolver with Pepper.
Right.
I don't know if I would want to get too much into the respective merits as to which one's better. That's maybe personal taste, but it's just...
Yeah, subjectivity is something that really, we can express our opinions.
Right.
And frame them just as our opinions.
As we frequently do.
As we always do.
Yeah.
It's a way of life here, Richard. But, you know, I would easily make the case, if prompted... Whose songs are better? You know, do you compare John's songs on Revolver to John's songs on Pepper, Paul's songs on Revolver compared to Paul's songs on Pepper. You know, you don't want to make it a practice to sort of start quantifying, well, this art is better than this art. But certainly within their body of work, you can rank what seems to show greater effort or greater boundary pushing than other things where clearly they're just trying to get one more track on the album, you know, that they're not really saying anything new.
I do agree with you. I think Pepper does have a few tracks that, from my perspective, serve as filler.
Okay.
You know, so for instance, as an example, not my favorite track on the album is Good Morning, Good Morning. It's okay. Uh-huh. It's got its moments, but it's just not a favorite track of mine. To me, that is like a filler track.
It is like a filler track. And I, you know, when I think back to my first impressions of that song, and this might have been even before I knew that it was inspired by this Cornflakes commercial on TV, that it sounded like a jingle to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's the whole good morning, good morning, good morning. And the verses are just, they're sort of, when you look at it within John's body of work, he's not singing about himself overtly, although you get this sort of sense of boredom in suburbia.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the theme of the song.
Yeah.
So he's not overtly singing about himself in a way that's unmistakable, like a help or in my life or something like that. But at the same time, there's this sort of detachment about it. And he doesn't tend to do narrative stuff about other people, you know, if he is writing about a character, not himself. So it's sort of this weird neither fish nor fowl perspective from a song, which is why to me, I guess to the extent that I gave it a lot of thought, I thought it just seemed like, you know, one more track to fill out the album, you know, filler, as you say, that it was almost like a professional songwriter taking on the task of, you need to come up with X amount of songs for this project, that it didn't mean anything to him one way or another.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I have to say, I haven't really thought about it from that perspective before, but what you said about, you know, comparing John's best songs on Revolver to his best songs on Pepper and doing the same for George and Paul.
Yeah.
I would have to agree that Revolver would win hands down in that regard. That doesn't take into consideration, you know, Pepper as a whole. You
right. Know, it's a different, you know, there are any number of yardsticks you can measure things by.
Yeah.
And again, I don't like putting myself in the practice of quantifying art. But we could sort of take a step back and look at their place in the Beatles canon and whether we agree or not with that place or what it meant for rock as a whole. You know, which one do you think had more influence?
Right.
You know, that would be a good question to sort of wrap your head around and examine.
Well, I remember in, I think it's the Roy Carr, Tony Tyler book, The Beatles Illustrated Record, which we're always referencing, one of the finer books from the 70s about the Beatles.
Oh, yes.
And in there they said that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that Revolver had aged better, even then, you know, like less than 10 years later, but mm-hmm. that Revolver had aged better than Pepper because Pepper was very much of its time. You know, it's of that sort of summer of love mm-hmm. and the sort of hippie ideals and the generation gap.
Right.
And as with all things that are very much of their time, they date more.
Yeah.
They just do.
I mean, I think that what we know about the whole Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band concept, you know, that Paul dreamed up on the flight from Africa with Mal Evans.
Yeah.
You know, first with the salt and pepper shakers inspiring Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
And then later on that outlandishly long name evoking West Coast bands.
Right.
There you see him directly taking literal inspiration from what was already happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that wasn't typical Beatles operating procedure.
Right.
They would draw inspiration from songs they liked, but never so overtly. And that's what really ties it to its time.
Yes.
The comparison I make is that, you know, it's sort of the audio musical equivalent of the Yellow Submarine movie,
mm-hmm.
which is like at the time, and I've read the reviews from 1968, how groundbreaking the animation was considered.
Right.
And it certainly is, you know, something that you look at now and be drawn in, and it's very visually kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it's also extremely dated.
Yeah.
In the way, like, you see the TV ads of the late 60s.
Sure.
You know, you look at it and you go, well, I know when that was made.
Yeah.
You know, what was considered cool and groundbreaking then. It's not like it inspired this great school of thought that people build on through the years.
Right.
It was sort of a one-off.
Yeah, it's not classic Disney. Right,
right, right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that people do consider timeless.
Yes.
You know, even Fantasia being my favorite.
Yes.
It's got some great, great visuals that you don't think, 1940.
Right.
You know? But you do think that when you listen to Pepper and see the whole package and what it projects, that come on, see the show, and it is sort of something for everyone. You know, like you said, the Generation Gap song and the Eastern Philosophy song, and then this sort of, you know, music hall throwback stuff,
right?
You know, that comes out.
Yeah.
Me personally, I think that A Day in the Life is the thing that mostly stands out for a number of reasons, but that one for me really is not of its time. It's something that has a timelessness
that
I think Revolver projects.
Yeah, because it's got a kind of classical feel to it.
It does.
It? You know, the orchestration.
That exists outside its time.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, it doesn't tie right to it.
Yeah, that's right.
And you look at some of the, you could say the same thing of in terms of being rooted to its day of other stuff they put out that year. You know, I'm thinking specifically of Both Sides of their next single.
Mm.
You know, All You Need Is Love, Baby, You're a Rich Man.
Yeah.
You know, outside of 1967, you know, it's hard to think of them as something timeless.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so tied to that whole, you know, milieu of the day
mm-hmm.
in a way that Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane are not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It to me is, if you look at it that way in terms of how something ties to this period of creation, that's where you can kind of really cut Pepper down to size.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one thing that you can't take away from Pepper is the whole sociological impact it made.
Oh, massive.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, everybody knowing where they were the first time they heard it. You know, I think its greatest impact was hit upon release to the people that were of age enough to experience
that. What was that quote at the time? Someone reviewing it said it was something like the closest that Western civilization has come to peace or
since
something.
The convention of 1815.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Nonsense overstatement. But I would say, at least in the States, the Beatles created two moments that united a nation. The first being February 9th, 1964. The second being the first week of June 67.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't there and of age, but by every account I've read, you know, there was
Where were you? I mean, you're not that much younger than me. I was around. So
I'm young enough to have, and that it would have been completely above my radar because I'm a child watching cartoons at the time. But anyway, there was a journalist, whoever it was, that said, described driving across the country in America.
Yeah.
And literally everywhere they went, Pepper was playing somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you read that, it's the same way you read the accounts of people from wherever, whatever walk of life they were, describing being in front of the TV set when Ed Sullivan came on with the Beatles.
Mm.
It's almost the same exact phenomenon when you describe where they were the first time they heard Pepper and people from all over the place. It really had that kind of splash.
Right.
And I compared it in my book, my Revolver book, to it's like when you go to see a much hyped live band for the first time. The greatest impact will always be the very first time you see them, experience them live.
Mm-hmm.
Then no matter how many times you see them after that again, they will never have that same impact again.
Right.
And the irony being the Sgt. Pepper album was intended to replace the live experience.
Yes.
So it's kind of funny that's how it worked out, that they couldn't have imagined that. I think that it's a lot easier for people of later generations to look at Pepper and go, what's the big deal? And you express
Well, certainly you've been kind
well,
of...
because I'm trying to see things as clearly as possible, you know, and
I know, but I feel
people are
going to
have an emotional attachment to things.
I feel that you push back against it a bit harshly. I mean, it's one thing sort of saying, well, maybe it's not all that it was hyped to be, and it's not their greatest album from your perspective, but I think you would still say it's a fantastic album.
I think it's a very well-produced album. However, and this really speaks more to personal taste, is I don't like a lot of production. And it just...
Well, you like Ram.
I do, but that's different. That, to me, is more timeless. There's something about Pepper that seems like, I can pick it apart track by track. And I think there's some good songs that got ruined by the production on that album.
So do you prefer Ram to Pepper?
As a listening experience?
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, my God.
Because, you're asking for a subjective opinion here.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, do you prefer Plastic Ono Band to Pepper?
Prefer it? No.
You don't?
I love them both in their own right. Different. No, but they're different records.
Nice waffle there.
No, it's not a waffle at all. I love them both in their own right.
Do you like chicken with your waffles?
Yeah, but... No, but really, you're comparing apples and oranges. I just wouldn't compare.
Well, you just asked me the same question. At least I was honest enough to answer it.
Yeah, well, honest enough, I gave you an honest answer as well.
No, you gave me a weasel word
answer. Oh, right. Yeah. So there it
like
is,
all
folks.
My
Robert prefers Ram to Sgt. Pepper.
I'm speaking of my opinion, my taste.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say...
It is a matter of taste, and mine's better.
No, I would tell you that I don't think Ram is a greater album in terms of it compared to Pepper, just because I recognize... Pepper had more impact and maybe short-term influence. And that's the thing. When you look at Pepper as an influence, it's easy to say, well, you know, it impacted everything that came after it because suddenly everybody was scrambling to make an album-length statement. But really, you know, the psychedelia was out of their system by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And any album that was so overtly impacted or influenced by Pepper was pretty much instantly dated by the time it came out.
Okay, but so what? That's of its time anyway. That's fine.
Right.
That's of its time.
So I'm just saying, if you want to make the argument which album had more impact, more sustained influence, I would make the case that Revolver did over Pepper. But Pepper is the one that, you know, ends up on Rolling Stone's greatest 500 albums of all time.
Maybe we should have done a show, maybe we should do in the future, you know, comparing Pepper with Ram.
I'm up for that.
I bet you are.
Yeah. As long as you want to compare Revolver to Plastic Ono Band.
I'd go with that.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah. But in terms of Revolver, the songs that spring to mind as my favorites, mm-hmm. okay, just again, personal taste.
Yeah.
I'm Only Sleeping, Here, There, and Everywhere, Love You Too.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow Never Knows.
Tomorrow Never Knows, of course.
Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah, Eleanor Rigby.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think ones that really jump out. That
She Said.
Yes. Yeah.
Andrew Bird Can Sing.
Yes.
Right.
I'm not as crazy on Dr. Robert, just my personal taste.
Right.
It's not one that I particularly...
I've found in life, just since I did my book and talking to people, that, you know, when people talk about what songs they would cut from Revolver...
Oh, and sorry, another one I would say got to get you into my life.
You would cut or you like?
No, I like.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that it always tends to be Yellow Submarine immediately followed by Dr. Robert.
Yeah.
It's the two songs people would most cut.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have to tell you, you know, despite having decades of gotten used to the British iteration, Dr. Robert, as much as I like it on its own merits as a singular composition, it never seemed to fit as well to me on Revolver.
Right.
It just kind of stands out.
I'd have rather had Rain.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with Pepper.
What are your feelings on I Want to Tell You?
I quite like it. I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites. I think it's a very credible song. You know, I love the minor chords on it. It's quite compelling.
The dissonance, everything about it. I mean, that to me is such an underrated gem.
Yeah.
So much thought was put into the production of that and everybody's contributions.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, I'm not really sure what John did on that without researching it, but you don't sense much of a John presence on there, which is too bad.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it didn't really call for any stacked harmonies. Mm. You just have that sort of dissonant harmony from Paul, which is, you know, that's the way I look at that song or that album generally, is that whatever was needed to fulfill that track and optimize it is what they did.
Right.
If it means, John, put down your rhythm guitar, we don't need it on this, that's what they would do.
Yeah.
Not, it wasn't a matter of, you know, him not appearing on it because he didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just what was needed or not needed.
Right. Now, on Pepper, my standouts, again, just spring to mind. I'm not looking at the track listing here, but definitely with a little help from my friends, I love the Beatles version, as well as I like the Joe Cocker version, completely different.
Yeah.
But I just love, you know, it's such a great statement of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much empathy in that song. And the John and Paul backing vocals work so beautifully with Ringo's vocals.
What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do I do when my love is away? Does it worry you to be alone? How do I feel by the end of the day? Are you sad because you're on your own? No, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends. Do you need anybody? I need somebody to love. Could it be anybody? I want somebody to love. Would you believe in a love at first sight? Yes, I'm certain that it happens all the time. What do you see when you turn out the light? I can't tell you, but I know it's mine. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. Do you need anybody? I just need someone to love. Could it be anybody? I want somebody to love. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends. Oh, I get high with a little help from my friends. Yes, I get by with a little help from my friends. With a little help from my friends.
Love that song. I really do like Fixing a Hole. I've always said that. I just love Paul's vocal on that. Guilty pleasure, uncool, but I like When I'm 64.
Yeah.
When I'm 64, this is take three, and it's a copy of take two.
Three, four.
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till quarter to three, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Be handy mending a fuse when your lights have gone. You can knit a sweater by the fireside. Sunday mornings go for a ride. Doing the garden, digging the weeds. Who could ask for more?
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Every summer we can rent a cottage in the Isle of Wight if it's not too dear. We shall scrimp,
shall scrimp and save.
Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view. Indicate precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Or will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Yeah, I enjoy that. And, of course, Love a Day in the Life.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that... Oh, and Within You, Without You. Mm. I've come to appreciate that much more. Years ago, I didn't, but yeah. I've come to really love that track as well.
I think that's one that I always liked. Mm. I never was one to skip that one.
Well, you said, though, that you were raised with the sounds of sitar in your home.
That's
you?
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do remember the year I got into the Beatles, which was... the year that I was first exposed to the Red and the Blue albums.
Yeah.
As part of that presentation of Beatle music, which was my music teacher, Within You, Without You was a song she specifically played for us and handed us a printout of the lyrics. And here was, you know, I'm guessing, I'm going to extrapolate that she was of age to have been around in the 60s, experienced it in real time, and that therefore it struck a chord with her and she was really trying to pass that on to the younger generations. Mm-hmm. I'd read the story where... Stephen Stills had the lyrics inscribed on a slab in his garden, you know. So I think if you were there at the time, this really was something profound to you.
Yes.
I mean, it took me a long time to kind of wrap my head around the lyrics and what he was trying to say, you know, from being a young kid when I first heard it. But I've always liked it. I've never been one to be dismissive of it.
It was kind of cool. A few years ago, I was in Beirut, Lebanon, and went to the Hard Rock Cafe there.
Yeah.
And outside on the wall, they had some of the lyrics from Within You, Without You.
Really?
Yeah. You know, another thing that we should look at in terms of the different aspects of Pepper and Revolver is that by the time of Pepper, they had a lot more time on their hands for writing, okay? They, you know, they now weren't on the road all the time.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting topic to take up because you see Paul writing pretty much continuously.
Yeah.
He being extremely prolific, you know, as the other Beatles would sort of, you know, say sort of, you know, not happily. Mm. That, you know, Paul's written his 10 songs. Now he says, you know, calls us up and says it's time to go into the studio.
Right.
And that then put the burden on them to come up with the material.
I've got no problem with that because, I mean, it's pushing them, right? Number one. And if he was just coming up with a pile of crap,
mm-hmm.
as he does in recent years, you know, that would be a problem. But when he's just doing these 10 songs, as you put it, mm-hmm. and most of them are absolutely brilliant,
mm-hmm.
you know, how can one criticize that? It's fantastic and it's just pushing them.
Well, and it really points to a very different band in 67 than the one in 66.
Right.
You know, we're right out of the gate. John's got all these great songs that he yeah. wants to start recording one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George rises to the occasion. He's got more songs than made it to Revolver that year. You know, he's still not writing as quickly as Paul is.
Right.
And by, you know, John's productivity really tapers off in 67.
Well, he's heavily into acid.
Yes, he is. Mm. He absolutely is.
Yeah.
And, you know, George maybe to a lesser extent, but he never had the speed in writing that Paul did.
Right.
You know, few people do.
Right.
So you've got John, you know, being sort of challenged to come up with material. You know, A Day in the Life, you know, his part of writing that song, you know, absolute brilliance.
Yes.
So he really nails it there. I would also say as a composition, he nailed it with All You Need Is Love.
Yeah.
I mean, given the purpose that the thing was intended for, you know, it absolutely makes the grand statement, very befitting its time, and certainly something that a lot of people to this day, even if you weren't alive in 67, still resonates with you.
Cool. Another Pepper track I forgot to mention that jumps out for me is Kite.
Kite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I know you're not a big fan
of. I'm not a big fan. Yeah. You know, that's one that I felt, you know, he could have been inspired by a good meal in a restaurant and taken the menu and written a song around that.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said,
you take away the production, you don't have much of a song.
Oh, I think the melding of the lyrics from the poster is very, very clever.
Least of all, a John Lennon song. You know, John Lennon, as we've talked about in the show before, when he speaks to his inner life, something that means something to him, or if he speaks in, you know, sort of his, in his own right, Spaniard in the Works sort of wordplay, he's untouchable. And Mr. Kite is neither. It's make weight of him coming up with one more track for the album that is rescued by its production.
I totally disagree. As I said before, I wish I could do that. You know, okay, give me a poster or give me a menu, as you put it, and turn it into that. You know, even without the production, it's very clever. And it's still got that druggy feel to it. It's got a surrealistic feel that the production then really embellishes and kicks that up. But it's in the lyrics as well.
Yeah, Mr. H, talk about your druggy references.
Yeah.
Which you denied at the time.
I know, and Henry the Horse.
Yeah, Henry the Horse, yeah.
But I think it's very, very clever. As I said, you know, it's one of those things you could say, well, he had all the lyrics there on the poster. Well, it's how he put it together.
Right.
So,
which Paul had a hand in, by the way.
Right.
That you know, not many people except Paul are quick to point out. You didn't ask me what I thought of individual songs on Pepper. No, Within You, Without You.
Yeah.
I like Day in the Life, of course. I like Lucy in the Sky way more than you give me credit for. You seem to have it in your head that I don't like the song. What I don't like, I think it's a great piece of production. Fantastic. Could have been a single on its own.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Celebrate flowers of yellow and green, towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes and she's gone.
the sound it projects, you know, the ensemble vocals, the harmonies in there, I think is great. What I always felt was the weak point of that song was the lyrics.
I think the lyrics are pretty cool. I think.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, no, come on. They definitely got a drug influence, even though he said flat out it was not about LSD. It was, you know, but it's infused with what's going on in his head, you know, and, you know, what is
it? They just seem very thrown together, you know, that grows so incredibly high. That's like a throwaway line. There's more picturesque words
he could
have done.
Well, but hold on. But in 67, putting that in a song was still daring. They were pushing the envelope. You know,
it was old by 67. People were doing it in 66.
Well, so what? They could still do it. It's the Beatles, though, and more people are going to listen to it if it's the Beatles, right?
So?
That's the whole point. So they're pushing the envelope here for themselves. What's this laughter over? Now, if you heard people singing tit, tit, tit as a backing vocal, no one would pay a blind bit of notice. You know, everyone's saying whatever they want on record. But then, just like, you know...
It's cutting edge, man.
Yeah, but it's like the censor...
Frère Jacques.
It's like the censorship era in Hollywood, okay? It's kind of fun to see them kind of trying to sneak things in these movies, right, to try and
which
get
they've done
the
more cleverly in 64, which she's a woman. Turns me on when I get lonely.
Well,
then it was daring. 67.
Well, you
like,
can identify with that.
That's your granny psychedelia.
But I think you have to see it in the context of the time, and it's not fair to sort of say, "Well, someone else had done that a year before."
Marshmallow people.
Yeah, but it is. It's kind of fantastical, isn't it? And it's. You know, it has. It's got that whole psychedelic feel to it, and the production embellishes that. For me...
A good psychedelic lyric is, I'm the walrus.
Oh, that's... Yeah, but that... I would say that's
even
on a
cry,
whole different
baby,
level.
Cry.
Yeah. But you're picking fantastic songs.
I'm picking songs
brilliant.
That show
I
him
never said Lucy
doing
in the
that
Sky
thing
is their
better.
Greatest song.
No.
I never said it's Lennon's greatest
No, but you're defending weak lyrics.
But I don't think they're weak. That's the point. You're saying I'm defending weak lyrics. I don't think they're weak lyrics. I think that...
Do you think you're as good as Walrus?
No.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean they're weak if they're not as good as Walrus.
That means they're not as good.
That means all of McCartney's lyrics then for the last 40 years are weak.
No, but if you were able to look at John objectively, his lyrical output, and sort of in your own mind, at least for your own, you know, opinion, subjectivity, decide which are more profound or better craftsmanship than other, you can't rate Lucy's as good as a lot of other stuff he did.
I totally agree with you, but that doesn't make them weak. That's all I'm saying. I still like lyrics.
John's own standards, they're weak.
I disagree. I could pick on lyrics of his that are weaker than that.
Something come to mind?
Run for Your Life.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of fits that sort of, you know, it's not a very sophisticated genre.
Right.
Kind of rockabilly / country thing.
Yeah.
I would point to something like on the Mind Games album. Only people just know how to change the world.
Oh, well, now, if you're going to go to solo, John, I mean, we can just go to Sometime in New York City for weak lyrics. I mean, that's pretty easy. Or I could go to Dear Yoko on Double Fantasy for weak lyrics.
Oh, Yoko.
Yeah, you know, but it's, you know...
In the middle of a wank.
But those are weak lyrics. You see, I don't think, you know, Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds is weak like that. That's my point. They may not be his greatest lyrics, but that just doesn't make them weak. You're just beating up on him as usual.
I'm not. I you know what you like
hater.
Fixing a hole so much. I never that song never connected with me. It sounded very that's like the one example of a Paul song in that album that sounds the most hippie 67 dated. This sort
really?
Of self-help thing. Yeah. It doesn't
what
have
about
a time.
Lovely Rita?
It's fine. It's not my favorite
See,
song.
See, that to me again is filler. You know,
yeah. I don't think it's to me the best part of that particular track is the production.
Yeah, you and know, the heavy breathing at the end.
Yeah,
the orgasmic sounds.
That is like the best part of the song for me.
Well, it would be.
It is. Interesting.
Yeah.
Unlike the rest of it. You know, the rest of it's like, it's a little twee.
Mm.
You know, 64, I can take or leave. It's a nice melody.
I love the John and Paul backing harmonies. You know, it's fun. It's
well, and John's fun. Contribution.
Yeah.
Vera Chuck and Dave.
Yes. Yeah. But no, it's the nice thing actually with the John Paul backing vocals through Pepper is that they're very easy to, you know, distinguish, right?
Yeah.
But you do lose that three-part thing, which is just the Beatles sound.
Yeah, I mean, there's different parts, like the Pepper theme, you know, you hear it there,
yeah.
I guess. You can definitely tell once your ears have kind of sharpened to who's doing what. It doesn't sound like very George Harrison-esque guitar playing out there. And now, of course, we know that it's not. Just like we know that it's not George Martin that arranged She's Leaving Home.
Right.
Because it so jumps out and it's so not his tasteful sound. You know, it's just, to me, it's like, God, why couldn't they just let him do the arrangement on that? And that's something that I wish even in his later years somebody would have asked him to do, and maybe he purposely steered clear of it because it still was a sore point.
Right.
I mean, that would have been so cool.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins. Silently closing her bedroom door, leaving the note that she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching her handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key, stepping outside, she is free. We gave her most of our lives.
She's leaving.
Sacrificed most of our lives.
Oh.
We gave her everything money could buy.
She's leaving home after living alone for so many years.
Father snores. His wife gets into a dressing gown, picks up the letter that's lying there, standing alone
top of the stairs. She breaks down and cries to her husband, Daddy, our baby's gone. Why would she treat us so thoughtlessly? How could she do this to me?
Talking about on Revolver that we would lose Yellow Submarine, possibly Dr. Robert.
Maybe. You're talking about on the Second Guessing the Beatles show?
Yeah, you know, yeah. And bringing in, you know, Rain, something like that. I know you really don't like the idea of having Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane on Pepper.
No. I didn't say that. Well, I mean, because we did when we reimagined those albums. Mm. I don't resist it. My point was the fact that George Martin was so adamant about that, saying over and over again, the biggest mistake of my career, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't
that
mean
that is a tacit admission that he thought, no, yes, it is.
No.
What else could it mean?
Could it not also mean that it could have made a great album even greater? It would have made it even more powerful.
Like, how much greater could it be?
Well, but it's true.
How much blacker could it be?
Yeah, but you could say that about anything, right? But you could say...
No, I think he was absolutely tipping his hand there that the album was not all it could have been.
Oh,
that he regretted it.
I don't... Yeah, no, but I never got that impression from him that he thought it was weak. He thought it was a wonderful album. He actually, as he said...
Well, what's he
going to
say?
On one occasion...
God, that sucked.
Oh.
You know all that hype you heard about Pepper?
On more than one occasion, he said that, you know, he was concerned that they were going a bit too far. And then other people were sort of saying, you know, another part
of him
was saying, it's bloody marvelous.
Yeah.
I think he thought it was bloody marvelous. I think he was extremely proud of it. I don't think it was any tacit admission that he thought it was weak.
No, then why else would he say
that? I think
that
his regret was, God, I could have made it even better. I could have made it even better.
No, he could have jettisoned a couple of weaker songs in favor of those that
had
were
those
undeniably
been,
great songs.
But had those been on it, okay, in place of what we've sort of said, in our opinion, is maybe more filler material.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it would have stood up as a really strong album as well. Right. You know, even song for song.
Well, you know what? We do know that in 66, from interviews given, that they were thinking in terms of the next project being this sort of return to childhood themes.
Yeah.
And it was something that, you know, okay, they did both sides of that single.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kind of walked away from the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, they come up with this hand puppet of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band to represent them. That's who the performances are on this record.
Right.
But then they walk away from the theme. And it was Neil Aspinall, I think, that had the suggestion, why don't you just reprise it at the end?
Yeah.
You know, so at least you can tie it together,
mm-hmm.
which apparently was a thought that didn't even occur to them.
Right.
It's that lack of follow through that, to me, it's irksome, because they could have made it greater if they just somehow found some kind of unifying principle that sustained itself throughout.
Well, really,
I mean, other groups were doing it really well. You look at Days of Future Past, which came out the very same year.
Yeah.
I mean, to that's a I love that album, if for no other reason than they at least had the discipline to stick to a concept and see it through.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it that once you get past With a Little Help, which isn't very far into the album,
no,
you kind of lose the concept, bar the, you know, the odd occasion when they insert a bit of laughter or applause or whatever.
Well, they did away with the rills in the UK.
Yes.
Unlike America.
Right.
That empty space between tracks.
Yes.
So that definitely... right there gave it a leg up.
Yeah.
Just because at least you saw how they were sort of tied together, even if there wasn't anything unifying them together.
Yes. Yeah. The thing with Revolver is, I mean, there is no concept there. You know, they haven't gone for the big build up. They've got a fantastic album cover. But, you know, Pepper really goes out of its way to outdo that, which is fair enough.
I think Pepper was in part a reaction to the non-reaction to Revolver that Revolver should have gotten.
Right.
You know, we talked about this in the Revolver show.
Yeah, they pull out all the stops with Pepper, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, they do. They absolutely, this, we're not going to get ignored twice.
Yeah.
I know you tried to contradict me in the Revolver show that, oh, yes, Revolver got its due.
Well, it did.
It didn't. Just because it did well sales-wise, anything the Beatles put out would have. I'm just saying that it didn't get the acclaim, partly because the infrastructure wasn't there in terms of rock journalism the way it would be in 67. Well, but nobody wanted to talk about it the way they talked about Pepper.
Yeah, but don't forget, Revolver set that up because,
Forgetting that. I'm making the case for that.
You know, they've come from Rubber Soul. In a way, the likes of Revolver raised the standards of rock criticism. That's what it did. So people were in place for that by the time Pepper came around.
Right. There was a variety of reasons why 67 was different in terms of being a receptive journalistic audience to what the Beatles were doing. Mm. Whereas when it came along in 66, the Revolver album, you know, not that didn't really exist too much. And they were still on that treadmill of business as usual.
Yeah.
You know, summer tour, you know, it's still looking the same. It was just expected to be the next album after Rubber Soul and nothing more. Mm. You know, they didn't spend the time on it that got spent on Pepper.
Right, right.
So you had that buildup of anticipation.
Yeah.
But I think the Beatles looked at it as though, you know, it was a major bold move to do what they did with Revolver, starting with the very first song they're recording. You know, they're totally doing away with their entire approach to making records to that point. They're kicking off the second phase of their career. I mean, literally with the count off on the first track. And I think they expected more of a reaction to it that they did not get.
Right.
And then with Pepper, it's like, well, screw you. You know, you're not going to ignore this one. You know, gatefold sleeve, splashed with color all over the place.
Yeah, lyrics on the back.
Lyrics on the back, inserts.
Fancy costumes,
everything.
Cutouts.
They're going absolutely all out.
Yeah.
And as far as Brian Epstein's concerned, they're getting incredibly self-indulgent.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, you know, rein this back in. You know, this is nuts. What are you guys doing? And it does seem to bear with it a lot of excess, unless you look at it as like they're not wanting to be ignored twice, notwithstanding the fact that the field was clear for them in 67 in a way that it wasn't in 66.
It's a really bold move, though, in a way, on their part.
Which one?
Pepper. You know, to go to that excess in a way.
How much bolder can they be?
Well, they were bold all the way through.
They were.
But between albums,
would you not agree, it's a greater leap from Rubber Soul to Revolver than it is from Revolver to Pepper?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Especially starting with Tomorrow Never Knows.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, Pepper starts with Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane. So that's...
Except they left them off the record.
No, I know. But
It's definitely a stepping stone to evoke the monkeys.
I mean, you know, when you talk about the concept of Pepper and how loose it is, had it been like side two of Abbey Road, which again, there's no real concept there at all.
No.
Okay. But it presents as one.
Uh-huh.
You know, it presents as this piece that, you know, George Martin had been suggesting and that Paul had taken up and, you know, run with it.
Right.
Had there been more of that on Pepper, I think it would have given it a tighter feel in terms of a quote-unquote concept.
In terms of what would they have had to done? Are you saying with that same group of songs?
No, I'm just saying in terms of finding ways of segueing between tracks, maybe making it feel like
more
it's
more crossfades?
Yes. You know.
Yeah, perhaps. And there's a few there.
Yeah.
But I think thematically they would have had to have dug deeper and come up with something that actually sustained some sort of concept.
Mm.
If it's Sgt. Pepper putting on a show, Sgt. Pepper being this band whose styles are all over the map, everything from these East-West ragas to, you know, this music hall stuff to, you know, something not of this planet, like A Day in the Life, you know, but they didn't do that. It's like they lost, interest in the concept before they were even done with the album.
Interesting. Back in the sort of mid-70s, I remember, I think it was the Encyclopedia of Rock, one of these sort of, you know, magazines, get all 52 issues and you know, get these binders and you got your encyclopedia. And I think in there it referred to Abbey Road, the second side of Abbey Road, as being Sgt. Pepper Mark II.
Mm.
You know, it's... In some ways, there's no connection there at all, but I kind of get what they're driving at.
Well, it's interesting that knowing what we know, that John changed the lyric in Mean Mr. Mustard to kind of dovetail with Pauline Pam.
Right.
Yeah, you know, originally it was his sister, Shirley.
Yes.
So there's his two cents to create some uniformity between two songs that have nothing to do with each other.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there really never was a Beatles concept album, basically.
No, not really.
No.
No. Unless, but I mean, at least not overtly.
Mm.
Now, you look at Revolver. What is a common subplot to that record? There's two that come to mind. One is that every song sounds completely different than the song that came before it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, jarringly so.
Yep.
They could have stuck the guitar songs together, but they break them up. You know, between Baroque-sounding things, piano-based songs,
yes.
Indian-sounding things, everything sounds different.
Yeah.
So that unto itself...
Kind of microcosm of the Beatles' career.
Yeah, it's sort of a meta-concept.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, never before on a Beatle record had you seen such a concentration of songs having to do with death and or the afterlife.
Interesting.
There's references all over. I mean, they're overtly like Eleanor Rigby.
Mm.
Taxman, you know, my advice for those who die, declare the pennies on your eyes.
Tomorrow never knows.
Yeah, tomorrow never knows. It is not dying.
Yeah.
And through the album, there are these references to beyond this world,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that if you looked hard enough and somebody came up with some kind of unifying theme, you could point to, well, you know, never before had there been a Beatles album, a collection of songs. You know, mostly in the past, they'd been variants on some kind of love song, something romantic. And there's not a lot of that on Revolver.
Right.
You know, besides Here, There, and Everywhere.
Yeah.
And then the flip side of that, for No One, you know, a breakup.
Yes.
There's not a lot of romanticism going on.
Right, right.
You know, Good Day Sunshine. I mean, all coming from Paul.
Yeah.
As we know, Revolver has become sort of this critical darling among people looking at the Beatles and what their most important, or at least what should be regarded as their greatest album is. I'm not saying, speaking for myself. I would rank it, as I have made the case, that it's their most important, only in that, A, they made the biggest advance forward in what were the paradigms of rock with a single album, and B, it was all four of them in full force contributing.
I would agree with the latter part. In terms of being their most important, it's just questionable.
I'm saying important because it's the biggest leap. Because they self-consciously went in saying, we're going to throw away everything we know. I mean, where do they do that elsewhere? They really don't.
Mm. But then again, you know, there's a giant leap, and I'm not saying it's on the same scale, but there's still a giant leap between Please Please Me and With the Beatles, okay?
It's not on the same scale.
It's an
advance in craft.
Yeah, but in terms of importance, you could say, well, look how it advanced their career at that point. Everything's got its own importance within
context. Talking the size of the leap.
Mm.
And there's no questioning
It's the Bob Beamon of Beatles albums.
What the hell's that?
Bob Beamon broke the world record at Mexico in 1968 with the long jump. It was like a giant leap forward, though. It wasn't like in millimeters. It was like he shattered
the
record.
It's the Neil Armstrong of Beatle albums.
There you go.
For mankind. They came in peace.
So my name's Richard Buskin.
This is Robert Rodriguez.
And this has been
Something about the Beatles.
Something About the Beatles, produced at Studio Media Recording, engineered by Scott Steinman, executive producer Rick Way. Title song by The Corgis.